Well, summer is in full gear and it's blazing hot outside, so that means there's a lot of insect activity, and also it's time once again for another edition of What's Bugging You, Red River Radio's program about our insect world with Dr. Beverly Burden. She is an associate professor of biology at LSUS and our resident entomologist. What's Bugging You is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite you to call in tonight with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish insects and the friendly insects, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. All bugs are welcome, and all questions are welcome, so please call in again, 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden, glad to have you back with us again for tonight's show.
It's great to be here, Bill.
So I've been looking through the bug world because I'm an amateur entomologist, which means I don't know anything. Come upon this really cool bug called the tiger beetle. Can you tell me what that bug is about, other than a tiger?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me, what is your favorite group of animals? And it would be the beetles. And among the beetles, one of my favorite is the tiger beetles. They're actually in the insect family called Cicindelidae. There's about 2,000 species worldwide, and 1,000 of those species are here in North America alone. One thing that makes them unique is that they are, in the insect world, some of the fastest runners that we have. Some can run up to 5 miles an hour. Now, you wouldn't think that's very fast, but when you're only about an inch in length, it is very, very fast. Just to give you some idea on how to put that into perspective, is they can run 125 body lengths in 1 second. 125 body lengths in 1 second. Imagine if we could do that. Their morphology is rather very, very characteristic of a tiger beetle. They have these large bulging eyes. They are predators, and because the eyes are so large and bulging, the area between the head and the rest of the body actually gives them the look that they may have a neck region. They have these long slender legs, part of the reason that they can run so fast, and they have these very large curved mandibles. Now, tiger beetles are a group that is oftentimes collected by amateurs. We know that a lot of people like to collect pretty butterflies, and a lot of people specialize in collecting tiger beetles alone because they tend to be one of two color morphs. They will either be brightly metallic blue, metallic green, just very, very brightly metallically colored, or they may be a little bit of a metallic darker color. And if they have the darker cultures, they have these reticulated patterns, these curvy patterns, kind of like you would find on a reticulated python on their body. And so they are very, very appeasing from a aesthetic point of view. Now, they are normally found in what they like to have as sandy soils. And you can look up tiger beetles online, and the one thing they won't tell you is that they have a very unique behavior. And that's because basically only entomologists know this. And this is one of the reasons that they're called tiger beetles. They are fierce, fierce predators. And they only fly in short bursts. If I cannot tell you how many times I've been walking along a sandy path, and I will flush a tiger beetle up, it will fly about 5 yards in front of me. It'll drop, and then it'll turn around and look at me. Like, okay, you scared me, but now I'm going to size you up to see if I might be able to come back and attack you. And so they're just so fierce. And that's the adult. Now, the immatures are quite unique in themselves. The immatures live in burrows that they dig into the sandy or the soft soil, and they have this humpback mechanism that allow them to anchor themselves into the burrows. And so their head will be just below the surface of the burrow. And any kind of prey item, especially ants, they'll reach up and grab and haul back down and eat it. But sometimes they'll grab something a little bit larger than they can handle. And so they anchor themselves in that burrow to keep them from being pulled out themselves. Mm. Now, you can go fishing for tiger beetle larvae, and I have done this. You take a stiff piece of grass and you stick it down in their burrow, and you can feel, just like when a fish is setting the hook, you can actually feel when their mandibles grab on to that piece of grass, and then you yank them out real quick. And I was told by a friend of mine whose mother and father are Cajuns, and they have a special Cajun name for tiger beetle larvae. And I'm not sure exactly how it goes, but it's something like a thululu, meaning ghost, I suppose, because they're very white. Now, like I said, there's 1,000 species here in North America, and there's actually one species that's endangered. Now, as far as tigers go, everybody knows that the Bengal tiger is an endangered species. Well, this is the Salt Creek tiger beetle, and it is only found in Nebraska, near Lincoln, Nebraska. And Nebraska is not, having endangered insect species is not new for Nebraska. The American burrowing beetle is also on the endangered species list, and it was last seen in Nebraska. I think there's a few remaining populations, but they're very well guarded, and only a handful of people know where they're at. And basically, that's because so much of the Nebraska natural grassland has been cut under for agriculture, so it's habitat loss is primarily why these are endangered. So if you're out walking on a sandy path and you see something flash in front of you, slow down, take a look, and you might have encountered a tiger beetle.
I know if you go online and click on the Wikipedia page for this, there's a number of colorful ones. I'm seeing one here that's got like speckled back, a little metallic blue and greens and yellows all over it. It's very colorful.
And that's why they're prized among amateur naturalists as to be in their collection, just like they would collect butterflies.
Right, yeah. Very,
they're gorgeous.
Quite gorgeous. All right, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we do have three phone volunteers tonight, so we can handle most of the call volume. And we have our first call from Lufkin. Chris, you are on with Dr. Burton. What's bugging you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a seemingly obvious question, but it's kind of counterintuitive to me. How come with our horribly cold winter, it seems like the bugs this year are worse, but not the mosquitoes? And sometime, if you have time, could you discuss, since we were talking beetles, the rhinoceros beetle? They're super cool to me, big and docile. And thanks for your time.
Okay. Well, as far as why do we seem to have the same or an equivalent population of insects that we would have even when the winter wasn't so harsh. Now, during the Arctic freeze vortex that we had back in early spring, first of all, insects have in their blood a chemical that's very, very similar to ethylene glycol, which is the chemical that's in antifreeze. And so their blood does not freeze at 32 degrees Fahrenheit like you think it should. Also, insects can overwinter in different stages. They can overwinter in their egg stage, they can overwinter in their larval stage, or they can overwinter in their adult stage. And they normally will either burrow down in what we call the leaf litter, and that's the area between the soil and that layer of debris. And so they're very well protected. It's almost like they're underneath a blanket. And the first snow we got actually acts as an insulator. And then we had, on top of that, the freezing rain. Or insects will find shelter to overwinter in. And so cold temperatures in our area is not enough to really deter insect populations. And mosquitoes are the same way. They can overwinter. But the other thing about it is, especially with mosquitoes, they have such a short generation time. They can go from egg to larvae to pupa to adult in just a very few days. And so within a week, they can triple their population numbers. And so because they have such a fast generation time, it looks like they weren't impeded upon by the cold at all. And so, and then the rhinoceros beetle is a part of the scarab family, and the males have this large horn, actually looks like a rhinoceros horn, and it's primarily on the males, and the males use it to fight other males for the privilege of obtaining a female to mate with. And they are one of the largest beetles that we have here in the Arklatex, only to be undone by the Goliath beetle, which is a little bit more larger. And so that's rhinoceros beetles, Goliath beetles. The scarab family is a hugely diverse family. Not only does it contain our June bugs that everybody knows everything about, but it also contains the dung beetles as well. And so the neat thing about the scarabs is the history of the reason the ancient Egyptians actually held the scarabs to be very, they revered them, not so much as gods, but as special entities. And one reason is because of the dung beetle. And they would see the dung beetles rolling their ball of dung along. And of course, they thought that the sun was pushed by the sun god Raj across the sky, and they thought that the dung beetles were associated with the sun god. Also, when they would look at these dung beetles, they would plant these balls of dung with an egg inside, but see, that's it. The Egyptians never saw them place the egg inside, and so they would bury them, and they think that they could spontaneously have life. So if you could bring life forth from a ball of dung, you must be really something special. You know, and so I kind of collect Egyptian scarab beetles. They're supposed to be a talisman of good luck, if you will, and well-being. But one of these days we're just going to have a whole show on beetles and nothing but beetles. And there's more species of beetles than any other insects in the world. In fact, there's a saying that God must have had an ornate fondness of beetles because he created more than those and than anything else. So even God was a coleopterist.
There we go.
So I'm in good company.
All right.
I love beetles.
Does that help you, Chris?
Oh, thank you so much. That was fascinating. I appreciate it. I could listen all night. Have a good night.
You too. Well, if we do a show on beetles, I've got the perfect band for it. So 800-552-8502 is the number to call right now. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we're taking phone calls about our insect world, any kind of insect, the fiendish or the friendly kind. Please give us a call right now. We have lines open and plenty of volunteers to answer the phones tonight, so there should be no problem getting in. And we go next to Don from Crockett, Texas. You're on with Dr. Burden. What's bugging you?
Hi. I have two insects I found in my yard that I'm hoping I can get some kind of an identification from. One looks like a grasshopper. It's about 5/8 of an inch long, and it looks like a clownfish. It's black and white, and the part that would be the thighs is bright red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tell you exactly what that is. It's called a lubber, L-U-B-B-E-R, grasshopper. And it's in its own separate classification away from grasshoppers, but they resemble grasshoppers enough, but they're just enough different to classify themselves by their own. And they are the brightest entities within the grasshopper family, including crickets and katydids and walking sticks and cockroaches and things like that that are all very very closely related. And what's unique is that they tend to come and go in alternating years. Some summers we'll see a lot of them, and some summers we won't. And they're actually also pretty closely related to the grasshoppers that used to have large swarms that they mention in biblical plagues, and large swarms that used to just totally decimate crops here in North America. We haven't had swarming grasshoppers in this country for
since the Dust Bowl.
Yeah, for a long, long, long time. And so, close to 100 years. And so that's what they are. They're harmless. They will feed on vegetation. But the other unique thing about them is they don't fly, is because they have non-functional wings. Their wings are extremely short. And that's another reason that they are exposing so much color, because that color isn't being covered up by the wings.
Okay. Well, I have one other thing.
Okay.
We have one of those compost bins where you put the compost in it and you roll them. Anyhow, I went out there the other day, and it had been raining, and there was a whole bunch of what I first thought were pill bugs on it. And then I looked at them, it looked like pill bugs that had melted. There was some kind of a worm. I was wondering if it might be pill bug larva or something. They were the same color as pill bugs, and they were segmented like they were, but they didn't have legs. They were some kind of a worm.
Did they have fringes on the side?
I think so, yes.
That's what we call a mealy bug. And they do look like pill bugs, but the pill bugs are actually crustaceans. They're more closely related to shrimp and crabs and such than insects. But they're scavengers. They rarely, and they do have legs. You just don't see them. Now, there is something else that it could be, and you might want to do a little homework on this.
Okay.
And that is, they could be immature scale insects. Scale insects at the immature state can move, and they're very, very flat, as you described. But they won't have the segmentation that you're seeing in the mealybugs. And so next time, take a picture, send it to Bill. He'll give you his email address, and we'll try to put it up on the August show.
Okay. Okay, I will try. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Don.
All right, you bet. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. All lines are open right now, so you'll get right in. Give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. In the meantime, we did have some photos that were submitted, and those can be found on our website on the post for tonight's show, What's Bugging You, and you can follow along. And we're going to start with a big old spider. Well, at least it looks big, because she has it compared to the logo on a small bag of Lay's potato chips. I hate to give the brand name out, but everybody's going to know it. When you see the photo, what kind of a spider is this? It looks rather ominous, and it's definitely got a lot of characteristic, you know, color patterns and other things to it.
Before I start that, Bill, why don't you tell them how to email these pictures to you?
Ah, okay, very good. Forgot to do that. Yes, my email address is wbeckett, that's a W-B-E-C-K-E-T-T, wbeckett at lsus.edu. And you can send any photos that you want for Beverly to identify, or even videos. We can extract information and still frames out of the videos. Go ahead and send those to me. Don't make the videos too long, because they are, you know, rather data intensive. But, you know, we've had a number of them sent in, and we just extract some of the images out of them for the show. So that's wbeckett at lsus.edu. And now we go on to this rather creepy looking spider.
People call me a lot and say, oh, man, I found this huge brown, blackish spider. And I'll say, is it about the size of a small apple, or maybe a plum really would be about the right size. And they said, yeah, it's huge. I said, is it hairy? They said, very hairy. Then my answer every time is that it's going to be a wolf spider. There are several different species of wolf spiders. They are predators, and so they're actually beneficial. They are non-venomous. They don't have they have fangs, but the venom in their fangs is not harmful to humans or to pets. And actually, one right here, if you take a look at this, I like showing this to people a lot. If you'll count the legs, you always should count them from the back to the front. And so it's 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it looks like it has a smaller pair of legs right next to the eyes. Spiders can have up to 8 eyes. They're not compound eyes like we see in insects, but they are simple eyes. But what looks like the 5th leg on that side are actually called palps. And if you see a spider that has large palps, that's always going to be the male spider, because he uses that palp to insert his sperm sac into the female. And so that's an interesting piece of spider biology, is the reproduction of these spiders. They will insert a spermatheca, it's called, into the pouch of a female, and she controls the fertilization of the eggs. Now, oftentimes, if a mosquito comes across a male she likes more, she can remove that egg sac and accept his. And so there's a lot of very interesting competition biology on that as well. So, yep, wolf spider every time. And the other thing about spiders, I say, don't ever step on a wolf spider, especially if it's in your house, because the females, when the eggs do hatch, will carry these spiderlings on their back for a certain amount of time. And I've had people call me up and say, well, I stomped on it, and instead of having one spider, now I've got 50 spiders all over my kitchen. I said, well, you shouldn't have stomped on it. You know, what was it doing to you? Take a broom and put it outside. And now they've got even a bigger problem, at least in their mind.
Right, yeah. So especially if you don't want them crawling on you. So
yeah, don't stomp on them.
Yeah, you know, so.
What'd they do to you?
All right. So, well, it looks like we lost one call, Don from Nacogdoches. I hope you'll call back. And I'm waiting for an ID on the next call to come in. But we're going to go ahead with this one anyways. And you are on What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton. Go ahead and turn your radio down in the background. I think this is John from Fishville.
Yes, but I don't have the radio on.
Okay. Well, we are hearing some kind of echo slapback when we talk, so I'll be pulling you down when we talk. What's your question?
I'm getting ready to, excuse me, I'm going to, my daughter's raising some quail. We're going to start feeding them larvae from the black soldier fly. And I just need some tips on the best way to get started with the black soldier fly to get a good crop of larvae.
Yeah, well, most fly immatures, once you get the eggs, they like to be in a rich, moist, organic environment. And so there is one company that sells artificial diet, but I know that they don't supply black soldier fly larvae. You might actually look more into maybe wax worms or wireworms that has a lot of literature on raising them as fish bait. You might get a little bit better luck at that. But I do have some experience in raising quail, and one of the most important things you have to do is protect the babies from fire ants. That the fire ants will go in there and really attack a defenseless baby quail. And so you have to be very careful with that. Or look into maybe some artificial mixes. That's my best advice to you. There's got to be something. If you decided on black soldier fly larvae, then there's got to be something out there in the literature that has more information than what I can give you today.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, you can get out your phone. You can look up anything you want to on your phone. And if you run into anything that you might need a little bit more advice with, my email is beverly.burden@lsus.edu. Give me give me an email, and maybe maybe we can come up with something together.
Yeah. Just as a side note, a few years ago, I was had a big worm bed, about 6 foot square worm bed, just for red wigglers. And boy, the black soldier flies got in there, and they hatched larvae in that soil. Unbelievable. It was beautiful.
Well, then now you have your own answer, right?
I don't have the worm bed any longer.
Well, you can get one.
Well, I suppose you're right.
Just dig up some ground and put some worms in it.
Yeah, I mean,
I
used to work part-time for a fish and bait shop back in Texas. And I remember having to put the cornmeal in there and turn over those beds.
Oh,
it was quite a workout.
Yeah.
Those were the days, huh?
Yeah. I love it. Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much. Keep up the good work, and don't be picking on Wally.
Yeah.
Oh,
thanks for your call, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, come on. It's a sport around here. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call right now. We have lines open at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question about the insect world, both the fiendish and the friendly kind, are welcome. And Don from Nacogdoches did call back. Thank you so much, Don. I don't know how we lost you, but you're back. And what's your question?
Hi, yeah, this is John.
Oh, John, okay.
John with a J.
Ah, gotcha.
I have a couple of questions. I don't know. I might be brief. I have been, I could not find a picture of this cricket, but it looks like a very tiny cricket, and it's like an albino. It's kind of a grayish white, and they're backwards long. Now, I have come across others that are larger, but they kind of hang out in, well, I guess like places where crickets hang out. It's funny, I seem to find them around metal. But I was looking in my little field guide, and I couldn't find, the closest I could find was a I've forgotten the name of the person it was named after, but these things are so tiny, and one was on my skin a couple years ago, and it bit me, and it really, really hurt. It didn't leave like a, it wasn't like a thief thing, it didn't last for very long, but it really shocked me because it's so small. So I'm wondering if you have any idea what this could be.
Let me ask you this, John. Why do you think it looks like a cricket?
because it looks just like a cricket.
Okay, a round head, two pairs of wings.
It's segmented with the larger oval body. And, the long legs in the back.
Okay.
And 1, 2, 3, yeah, 6. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
Is the body straight or curved?
Well, it's kind of ovaled.
Okay.
When you say curved, is that what you mean?
Yeah. There are some species of crickets that are extremely small. There's actually a species of cricket that's green instead of black or brown. And this gray oval is kind of new to me. All crickets and grasshoppers have large mandibles. And so they can pinch the skin. And so that would not be unusual at all. But I can't tell you exactly which kind of cricket it is, but it certainly is an unusual one. If you can take a picture and send it in, that would be great, and we'll talk about it next month. But all crickets feed on plants, or they feed on decayed organic matter, so they're not going to be a pest. And the fact that you find them around iron is kind of unique. They may be attracted to the color in a camouflaging way.
Yeah, that makes sense. And not necessarily iron, but just steel. It was on a composter, which of course had compost stuff around it. So it wasn't in any place particularly unusual, but I've just seen them around my property, and usually like around, well, where you typically would find crickets, but on the outside.
Right.
I haven't seen any inside. I just wondering why it bit me. It was pretty amazing. Just another couple of quick questions. Oh, I did send a photo to you just this afternoon through the email of an asp that has white, what almost looks like little white insulators that they used to use for power lines, stuck in it. We're speculating that those are some type of parasite on the asp. Have you ever seen an asp with little white parasites sticking out of its body?
Yeah, I have. Those are parasites, and they called those blooming because it actually looks like plants are coming up out of the soil, but it's coming up out of the body.
Yeah.
And these are little wasp that the female wasp will come along and insert her ovipositor into the immatures, and then they will literally eat the host alive. And then when they get ready to pupate, they'll pupate attached to the body wall, but to the outside of the body. And so that's not unusual to find. But most people don't see it because they're not that observant. People have to really have their eyes open and looking around in order to find these little treasures of nature.
Yeah, that's real interesting. Well, I got a pretty good photo of it, so you'll see it later on. And just one, if I can, just one more really quick.
Okay.
You were talking about pill bugs. Actually, I have two more, but anyway, we have pill bugs that are eating greenery. They're eating our flowers, actually. So is this uncommon or common?
It's uncommon, but I have a hypothesis on why they might be doing that. Pill bugs normally, as you know, like to be in moist areas up under things. So if you have a board and you pull a board up, you'll see the pill bugs underneath there, or what we would call the roly-polies. And if it's too moist, it might be driving them up into the plants away from the soil. And they're actually probably not eating the petals too much as a form of nutrition, but a form of actually moisture, because they're not close to the soil where they normally would get their moisture because it's too wet.
Okay. So just knock them off then.
Yeah.
Well, I just can't believe how much they have attacked our live plants. And of course, you always read, well, they eat on composting stuff, dead things. So, okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay, can I give you one more real quick?
And just one more comment.
Yeah, we don't have any calls waiting, so.
Just one more response to what you just said. You can't believe they're doing that. Well, see, that's why insects are so successful, because they are so resilient. You give them a challenge, and they will find a way to overcome.
Okay, well, that's interesting. I did read recently that insect populations are dropping worldwide. Are you familiar with that?
I am very familiar with that, and it's been completely over-exaggerated. I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, okay.
Insects have been around since the Cretaceous, so geological time period, and so I'm not worried about the insects.
You think they're going to manage, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Which means they survived the dinosaur apocalypse.
Yeah, they did.
Right, okay. I have a horn beetles have devastated our century plants out front. This was about 3 years ago. I just wanted to throw that in. They were hatching their larvae inside, and they completely wiped out several large century plants. So I just wanted to throw that out at you since y'all were talking about the rhino beetle a little while ago.
Yeah, probably there's a lot of beetles in that group that have horns, and one of my favorite is in the genus Vinvex, and sometimes they'll call them the rainbow beetles, and the males will have a horn, and they will feed very similar to June bugs, and if not kept in check, they can knock down the foliage on shrub plants pretty quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, I thank you for answering so many questions. It's been pleasurable talking to you.
Thank you for your call, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We have all lines open right now. You'll get right in at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question about the insect world is welcome. And we go next to we had three submissions from Loretta in Florida. And the first one is this interesting looking character, very gray colored, has a big oval on his back, almost like an armor plating, right above his head, it looks like.
Yeah, this is called a wheelback bug, and it's actually in the same family of the assassin bug that carries Chagas disease, but these are not known characters of Chagas disease. This is in a group that we call the true bugs because their front wings overlap, creating an X and a triangle-like mark, but with this particular one, it's called the wheelback bug or the cog bug. And just think about, I can't think of it right now, maybe a stegosaurus where on the back it has these ripples.
Right.
These look like a cog wheel that you would turn and it would catch into a chain and cause something else to turn. And the other unique thing about this, if you look at the wings, it doesn't completely cover the abdomen. You can see on each lateral side how you can see the segmentations. That's very characteristics of this group of bugs. There's some of the the larger insects that we have that are not beetles. This is the largest true bug that I am aware of in this area. And so they can still emit sometimes scent glands, and so I would not mess with these because they don't have mandibles, but they do have a beak in which they can inject, they can stick into your skin and inject saliva that can cause a whelp, especially if you're sensitive to things like that. I love them. They're just so fascinating. And you have to wonder, how does something like that evolve? You know, what kind of selection pressure was put on that population over time that it has to be a defense mechanism the way it is? So maybe the spines used to be a little bit sharper and they've gotten duller, but it's an amazing, amazing critter. And they don't fly very much. They do a lot of walking and they're not aggressive at all. They're probably more scared of you than you are of them.
Looks almost like an armor plating to protect it from getting bit on the back there.
Yeah, you know? It does. Yeah. That's why I, you know.
Probably a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, is trying to eat it.
So. Okay.
Yeah. It definitely, the Stegosaurus is correct, and that's what it reminded me of. So, interesting. All right. You are listening to, did you have anything more on this?
No, not really. It's just a lot of people call in and say they think they're unique. They're not rare, but you got to really be observant in your environment to see these things.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nice.
A lot of bugs out there just baffle me. You know, it's like water bugs, which we used to get in Ohio, big black ugly things. And they had the most fierce mandibles on them that I'd ever seen. And I don't know what they used those mandibles for, but
they're predators.
Okay. Well, it would look like it. I mean, they literally look like something out of a sci-fi movie, you know, with some kind of weird creature. Those would make good monsters, too. So You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burton, our resident entomologist. We have lines open now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. You should get in pretty quick. So we only have one caller online right now, and that's Glenn from Benton. Glenn, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Dr. Burton, I have two questions. One of them pertains to a water bug specifically. I heard you mention just a second ago. I found a water bug in my pool. It's about the size of a lima bean. and it swims. It has some really strange swimming practices, but it ends up like chasing me. It's almost like it wants to bite me. Can you have anything to say about that?
Well,
when
you said it has some pretty strange swimming, can you just be more? Can you explain that?
Well, like for example, it doesn't like seek me out until the pool. When I'm in my pool, the waves or the water washes the pump washes the water around, and then as it moves around in the water, then it, when it sees me, it seems like it wants to bite me because it wants to swim towards me, my abdomen area in the pool, and I swat it away, and then it gets carried away with the current again. So I'm just curious if you knew what it might be and how I might get rid of it.
Is it black and oval? When you say it's about the same size of a lima bean?
It seems to me like it's more greenish, like dark green, almost like an olive green color. Does that sound familiar?
It does. There's this one group of insects called the predaceous diving beetle, and they are predators. But the thing about aquatic insects, one thing that they're attracted to are vertical shadows. And, of course, you being in the water creates a vertical shadow. And that's why it's trying to chase you, because they think that they can either crawl up and get shelter, or perhaps it might be a prey item for them. And so they're even if they do bite you, they're not very venomous at all. And so, you know, I would just take and scoop it and throw it all over the side of the pool. You know, I don't think a grown man should be running away from a little bitty beetle. And so, yeah.
You never know.
Yeah. You know, I'm telling you, you can, Glenn, you can beat this thing, okay? Just it's not bigger than you are.
Yeah, that's true. But when you call it a diving beetle, that sounds very much like its behavior, because it would like dive down towards my lower torso or upper legs. I haven't seen it before. This is the first year that I've seen it, so that's mm-hmm. why I was really it was odd. But thank you for that. The second question that I have is I was mowing the grass a few days ago, and I accidentally bumped up against a burn barrel that I have that has some rusty openings in the bottom of it, and an entire swarm of what appears to be bumblebees came flooding out. And I wasn't sure if they were bumblebees or if they were carpenter bees that had gotten, you know, kind of gotten together and formed a group or what. But man, they were mad as a hornet's nest, as they say. And thankfully, I was almost finished, so I just put the mower away and let them die down. But I did walk back over there, and one of them grabbed onto my pant leg and looked like he was about to tear me up. What do you think that was?
It probably wasn't a bumblebee or a carpenter bee, because those are solitary bees. They don't have colonies the way you were describing. But since we're on the subject, though, let me tell you and the audience that it's a very easy way to tell the difference between a carpenter bee and a bumblebee. The abdomen, the rear end of carpenter bees are all blacks, but the rear end of bumblebees will have some yellow on it. And and so there are some larger bees that will nest together, even though they're not colonies. These are called burrowing bees. And I wouldn't expect them in a burn barrel. But I'm more concerned about you, Glenn, these insects that keep attacking you. I think it's kind of fun. You know, if it's not the predaceous diving beetle, then you got these strange bees attacking you. And
well, it's just so coincidental that it happened to be that these subjects came to mind recently. I mean, right. It was just the other day when I ran into this burn barrel. And by the way, this is a burn barrel that is about to be put out of its misery. In other words, it's rusted. It's ready to be cut up and put in the trash heap and start over again. So I haven't used it in a while, which doesn't surprise me that there's some creature has taken up housekeeping in there. But what would you recommend that I do to rid myself of whatever this insect is?
I would say
so that I can cut it up and get rid of it.
Well, if it was mine, I would go over there. I'd use some gloves, and I would take the burn barrel and turn it completely upside down, and leave it there for about 10 days, and then take it off and move it away from that area. I find with most insect problems, time is your friend, and I would suggest by turning it upside down, and that's going to really mess up their orientation, and they will leave, and then you won't have any problem.
Right, and thank you for answering the question in a way that I would want you to answer it, which is not in a way to extinguish their life, but simply to give them the opportunity, give them an invitation to find another place to live. So
let them move on.
Thank you for answering the question that way. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Now, the last thing you should do is go get a can of insecticide and spray out the barrel. That's not going to do anybody any favors. Just, you know, let nature take its course and let them move on, you know, as they say to the spirit world, move to the other side and they will be gone. And hopefully you won't get attacked as much.
As a parting comment, I came home one day a few weeks ago, and the people that read the meter of my water meter had left the lid off, and apparently a swarm of honeybees had taken up housekeeping around the water meter. And so I had hoped that I would be able to capture them and put them in a hive, because I am interested in the beekeeping hobby. I just haven't pulled the trigger yet. But alas, when I came back, they had gone somewhere else. So they decided this was not a safe place to live and took their family and went somewhere else. So
if you're interested in the art of apiary, which is what beekeeping is, there are some fantastic beekeeping programs, some fantastic beekeeping clubs that you can join, and learn as much as you can before you get started, and the fellow beekeepers will help you get a colony going. And so you don't have to go at this alone. And I would really encourage anybody that wants to keep bees, whether you want to harvest the honey or not. It's just that you're helping the pollinating plants to become, you know, pollinated. And the more pollinators we have out there, the better. And I know if Cliff Shackelford was here, he would be agreeing with me to keep all things like that natural, even if you're in an urban ecosystem. So good for you, but look up some of your local beekeeping groups. They can be a wonderful source. And the weird thing about it, I was just reading an article this last month, is that there seems to be a generation gap between the people that that keep bees, are probably, I'm going to call them grandparent age, and then parent age. They never got into beekeeping, but now it's the next generation that's interested in beekeeping. And so that's very encouraging that we nourish that population of beekeepers in our area. And it seems like Bitten would be a really good area, because it's a little bit in the country, a little bit not in the country, and you might be looking at a very good habitat for them.
Absolutely. Well, Doctor, thank you so very much for your time this evening. I appreciate it, and I will let you take the next caller.
All right. Okay, thank you.
And Glenn, if those bees carry you off, please let us know. Send us a postcard from wherever they drop you.
Yeah.
I will. Thank you. Good night.
He's got a bullseye on him, you know?
Yeah, I'm telling you. All right, thank
Bye-bye.
You so much,
thank
Glenn.
You.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can call in now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, but make it quick because we only have about 10 minutes left in the show. And we do have one call online. John from Fishville is calling back. John, hey, how are you?
Well, we're doing good, enjoying the show, of course.
Something happened today. It's a new question for me. I enjoy my evenings out in my back porch. I got a 12 by 24 glassed-in porch that I can run an air conditioner out in. And so when it's too rainy and all that stuff outdoors under the oak tree, I come in here and enjoy the evening. And today, but I've been having a terrible time with flies and stuff, and I use those sticky ribbons, but I got gnats. And today I put a bomb in here. And I don't like to poison stuff, but I put a bomb in here and locked up the place for about 6 hours. And then when I got home, I blew everything out, cleared it out. And now I've got gnats just 3 hours after they were poisoned. I wonder what happened.
It's been shown that bombs are one of the most least effective types of insect control methods that there are. And I don't know the science behind that. I just know from what I read in my professional journals. So I would not rely on bombs. What I would do next is, you've seen these yard sprays. They come out with a very fine particle. It's almost like a fog. And the fact that it's liquid and not bomb, then it's going to be a lot more effective. But see, here's the other thing. Like I said before, insects are always going to find a way. And I'm not sure how you're distinguishing between gnats and midges and things. They're all small flies that can be very, very irritating, of course.
These are so tiny, you can't even see them until they're going up your nose.
Yeah. Mm. So there's actually a little midge it's a gnat. Called a no-see-um.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are so tiny, small, and they can be extremely irritated.
Yeah. And now, here's another option real quick. I've got down in my hen house, I got a blue light fan thing that draws the insects into it, and then they can't get out. I wonder if that would be effective for this tiny, tiny little critter.
I think it certainly would be worth a try.
Yeah.
I think it certainly would be worth a try.
Yeah, and they're quiet, and... Oh, they really work. That's what saves my hens from getting torn up by these gnats. Yeah. We have a terrible gnat situation.
Yeah, and those fly strips, they're not very... They let you monitor the population, but they don't decimate the population.
Right.
It's more of a monitoring tool than a tool to eradicate or to get rid of them.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't think the little ones get on there. I got... Two or three, well, I got five strips that I can see in here. And they're about half full of flies, but no, I don't see any tiny, tiny critters on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you for your help. Keep up the good work. You need to come on more than once a month.
Bill and I are co-directors. We'll have to take that under advisement.
There we go. Yeah, that's the operative word. Take that under advisement.
They need to raise your salary.
I'm getting paid.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Never mind.
You mean they pay me too? Heavens to Betsy.
And I tell you, I do this gratis because I am an LSUS biology professor. And KDAQ and Red River Radio is a part of the LSU system. The FCC licensing is held by the Board of Regents down in Baton Rouge. But my job is to educate and engage the community. And this is one way that I can do that.
And I'm so proud of Red River Radio. It's my station.
Good.
Yes, Wally.
Okay, we'll do it.
All right, thank you.
All right, good night.
You bet. And you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist. We may have time for one more call, but you got to get it in quick at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. In the meantime, we still have some photos that we have not identified yet. And we've got a fuzzy-looking caterpillar critter up on our website right now from Loretta in Florida. And, you know, you've always said if they're hairy like this, don't touch them. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, it has a lot of different spikes on it. Sometimes people refer to these as fuzzy-wuzzy bears.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually one species that will have black on either end and then red in the middle. And supposedly the width of the red band will tell you whether it's going to be a mild summer or mild winter or a harsh winter. There's been a lot of studies done on that, scientific studies, and there's really no strong correlations to that. But I will take this as an opportunity to share with our listeners that their caterpillars do come in two types, smooth and hairy. And if it's hairy, don't touch it, because some of these spines have toxins in them. And when you break them off, then they inject that toxin into your skin. And it's not nothing that's going to kill you or make you lose a finger, but it could be extremely painful at times. And so I say caterpillars, let them be, unless they are eating your plants. And then go in the house and get a wooden or a plastic spoon, knock them off, and stomp on them. That's the best organic measure you can do.
There you go. And then we have one other from Loretta, and that is what she thought was a beetle of some kind, and she had sent a video in. This is an example of a still frame from a video that we took, but you're saying it's not a beetle.
It's not a beetle. Beetles have a straight line down their back. These have an X line across their back. These belong in the true bug, the same different grouping as the cogwheel or the wheelback bugs, but these are called the leaf-footed bugs because on the hind legs, the lower end, what would be the tibia on our leg, it's flattened out, very similar to a leaf, and these have very, very strong scent glands, so please don't touch these because that scent, you can't wash it off, it basically has to wear off.
Sounds like a stink bug almost.
It's not almost. It is a stink bug.
Okay, well,
there you go. But it's not a typical stink bug.
Right, yeah. So there are a variety of those, and you don't want to squish them. You don't want to do anything of them other than stay away and don't mess with them because they will stink. So any other final thoughts you want to share with the audience tonight? We have no calls right now, no other photos, but a little bit of time.
Well, we are getting into our cicadas are now coming out. You can hear them during the day. You can certainly hear them sometimes at night competing with the tree frogs for the area. And so my big thing right now, there's a phrase for it, but it's been shown that today's youth, I'm talking about the kids, grade school kids, middle school kids, do not engage nature enough. And encourage your kids to go outside and play. Decrease the screen time, increase the outside time.
We had talked last week with Cliff about creating a scavenger hunt or some kind of educational environment where it's fun, you know. We want you to go out and find these kinds of bugs and give them pictures and everything to look at. And, of course, you know, there's always that carrot and stick. There's a little reward, maybe a cupcake, piece of cake, whatever. You know, something at the end of that, you know, for the fun of it. I'm sorry to the caller who's calling in right now, but we won't have time to get you in as we are out of time right now. Dr. Burden, I want to thank you so much again. You had something else to say?
Oh, no, I just completely agree with Cliff. Cliff and I seems to be on the same page with things, and we just want people to appreciate nature. And a lot of the pandemic activity did send people outside. Mm-hmm. And so kids need their green space. Please give it to them.
There is so much wonderment in nature that it will astound them once they get into it and start seeing it all. Then it's not a video game either. It's reality, which is usually better than a video game, in my estimation.
I think so, too. So our next show in August will be, do you have that date?
Yes, that is going to be on August 24th, 1 week later than normal. So we will be here next month. So, Dr. Burden, I want to thank you for joining us again.
It's always fun.
You bet. You've been listening to Dr. Beverly Burden, an associate professor of biology at LSUS and Red River Radio's resident entomologist. We'd like to thank each of you for calling in tonight and hope that you'll join us the next time for another edition of What's Bugging You. That is going to be on Tuesday, August 24th. Stay tuned for Radio Lab next. What's Bugging You is produced by Bill Beckett and Dr. Beverly Burden with assistance tonight from Wally Derleth, Sheila Lawrence, and Tim Schnell. And Dr. Burden is our resident entomologist, and I've been your host tonight. This has been a production of Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public media service of LSUS. This is KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Camden Magnolia, KODN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore. Radio Lab is next.